As part of our Jukai ceremony, before receiving the precepts, we recite a short verse of atonement, which says, "All evil karma ever committed by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, I now confess and atone for it all." A year ago, the Soto Zen Buddhist Association, in response to all the upheaval in the country, put out a longer, more detailed statement of acknowledgement and atonement, which I'd like to read for you now. "Gathered here today as Zen Buddhist priests and custodians of the Dharma, we pledge to face, acknowledge, understand, and hold the weight of our collective karma so we may practice and teach with clarity, vulnerability, and honesty. With heavy hearts, aware of our own complicity, we understand that across time and culture, men have harmed and dominated women, creating patriarchal cultures of fear. Buddhist and Zen culture have been as guilty of this as any other, sometimes even distorting the teachings to allow for such misguided power to be wielded. That we in this moment, in this very place, stand on sacred ground of indigenous peoples that has been stolen from them and with cruel deception and religious doctrine maintained as if a right of those who have taken it. Our nation has capitalized on this theft and their internment and genocide, a theft that continues as indigenous people remain unacknowledged and uncared for by a cruel social system they had no hand in shaping. That the colonization of what we call the Americas and the rise of the United States as a global power rests upon the enslavement of African people, taken violently from their homes and forced to labor under brutal and oppressive conditions. That we as individuals and communities live in a world in which some, only because of the color of their skin, are accorded social and economic privilege. We recognize the willful blindness that upholds this privilege, as well as the indignity and pain of systemic oppression, exploitation, enslavement, and deportation of those whose skin does not accord them this privilege. We atone for the suffering caused by racism in all its forms and vow to dismantle the white supremacist systems that maintain oppression, including mass incarceration and deportation, persecution and exclusion of refugees and immigrants. That we as individuals and communities have treated people with disrespect, cruelty, and violence because of their sexual orientation and gender identity. That we as individuals and communities are complicit in an unfair, classist economic system that divides humanity into winners and losers, exploiter and exploited, that encourages selfishness and conflict. That as human beings, we cannot separate the gift of our own existence from the violence being done through short-sightedness, greed, and self-importance, to our planet and the many beings with whom we share it. As individuals, as a Sangha, and on behalf of all who came before us, we atone for our participation in all systems that perpetuate domination, violence, greed, disrespect, and unfairness. We pledge ourselves to overcoming these forces in ourselves and in the world for the benefit of all sentient beings, victims as well as perpetrators. Now, as we chant the verse of repentance and renew our vows, we bow in reverence, sorrow, and determination to overcome and heal the forces that cause such pain. For ending suffering within and without is the Dharma's true gateway, the Buddha's true heart. I'm sure you'll agree that that is a very powerful, detailed expansion of the verse of atonement that we chant, perhaps all too infrequently as part of our practice. And yet, as I read it, what occurs to me is that this kind of statement, which is so powerful on a group and institutional level, is not something that has been traditionally incorporated into practice itself. We have to ask, in what way is what we do in our sitting or in our Sangha engaging with any of these issues? How does our sitting engage with our privilege, whether it's economic or gendered or racial? Where does it get a handle or any leverage on the way those things are so deeply ingrained in our character? And I think the reality of practice is that this kind of statement is necessary because practice itself traditionally bypasses completely this level of suffering. And indeed, when this statement was made public, there was a lot of discussion about whether practice could or even should engage with society at that level, whether practice was not fundamentally about seeing through the illusion of self attachment, of self-nature, and then doing that, penetrating that directly, was the work of the Dharma. And then all the things mentioned in that statement could only come about as the byproduct of the confrontation with self-centeredness and the delusion of self-illusion. In fact, our practice has traditionally been oriented towards taking a kind of deep dive in consciousness till we reach a level beyond distinction, a level that dissolves the difference between self and other, us and them, man and woman, black and white, rich or poor. That the pursuit of samadhi itself is the attempt to find our way into this space where everything just is, just as it is, without separation and without distinction, without loss, without gain, no have or have not. We could say that so much of our practice is founded on awareness of that level of existence. And that what we've called deep practice or deep sitting is the capacity to settle in to that space of no separation and no difference. I think that on a personal level, there is a way that touching that place can be deeply healing. It can allow us to truly feel that nothing in us is broken, nothing is missing, that we have no lack, that we don't have to endlessly judge or compare ourselves, that we really, from that seat, feel the fullness and completeness of the moment and ourselves and life as it is. That is the depth and richness of just this, just this. And yet, it's the very nature of that kind of practice to bypass difference, to allow us to feel that we've touched this place of healing and wholeness without engaging in any of the particulars or any of the specificity, the psychological and social and cultural and historical barriers that create separation in ourselves and in our society. It allows us to rest in a false kind of confidence that we've overcome all those differences, and that we are able to settle into a place that is beyond difference and beyond separation. And so there's a dimension of practice that, while it provides great assurance, also can devolve into great complacency and a sense that if we can touch that sense of perfection, somehow all that messy psychological and social and political work is superficial. It's the merely psychological. It's the merely political. But that's not the real business of contemplatives. When I started practicing 40 some years ago, it was very common to hear in Zen centers that what they did was not merely psychological, right? that what they aimed at was deeper, more real. And there was the sense that if you penetrate the true nature of the emptiness of the self, all those pesky psychological problems would dissolve on their own. This was sort of the great illusion of the trickle-down theory of enlightenment. And what we have in the statement from SCBA is a recognition that even within the community of the Dharma, in the monastic sanghas, there was for generations a kind of equivalent trickle-down mentality that these communities organized and led by enlightened masters were of course free of sexism, of course free of discrimination, of course free of any of the kinds of class or social discrimination of that outside world, that by putting on the robe and following this path, we had somehow automatically separated ourselves and freed ourselves from needing to work on all those issues. And I think the realization within our communities, I think first and foremost, issues of sexism and male domination made themselves obvious through years of emergent scandals, but increasingly issues around race and gender and class, we also see are not automatically dissolved by joining a Dharma community. So we need to be able to think of our practice, our meditation practice, as operating at a number of levels. I would never want to discount the value of that deep dive into samadhi, that deep dive into non-separation, that experience in which nothing is hidden, nothing is missing, and we can truly feel that just as we are not broken, but that we, just as we are Buddha. Absolutely crucial to what we're doing here, to be able to partake of that dimension of practice. But it's also true that we won't engage the resistance to that unless we in some ways stay closer to the surface sometimes. That we become aware of our resistance, our likes and dislikes, our restlessness, our judgment, our complaint, often felt most intensely about each other or about how things are going. And in all those ways, we watch how we set up the barriers of judgment and superiority or inferiority. And we try to feel something of the anxiety and vulnerability that puts and holds them in place. The feelings of I've got it and you don't, or you've got it and I don't, right? All the things that say in a thousand little ways, moment after moment, this is not it. Right? I'm not it. I'm not who or what I should be. I'm not there yet. I think we actually have to go down into the weeds of all those kinds of negations of the moment and of our own Buddha nature in order to really work them through. It's both the good and bad news that we can occasionally, sometimes very intensely, taste an alternative to that kind of feeling. We can have these moments of intensity and perfection and oneness and non-separation. And these are very important door openers that show us that another world, another way of feeling and being is actually possible. But the temptation is to try to bypass the hard work that on a day-to-day basis engages the things that keep us from living our life that way, day-to-day, not just enjoying the deep dive into samadhi when we're on the cushion. So let the verse of atonement and this expanded statement of acknowledgement and atonement from the SCBA remind us of all the real work that has to be done day in and day out at this nitty-gritty level, this psychological level, this social level, this political level, that too is part of our practice, part of our meditation. Pay attention to all those moments of not it. Enjoy the deep dive when you can into this is it.